Welcome, welcome to today's Dharma talk. And as Inez said yesterday, the topic is about like spaciousness and experience, or spaciousness and our inner life. Or she didn't use those exact words, but it's a little bit what I'd like to point to. This idea of spaciousness, and for me, I'm kind of thinking this as freedom. Right, because when things are constricted and we're stuck, it's kind of like the opposite of freedom. And I'd like to start with a poem, a very short poem. And it was written by a poet who read these awakening poems by women that were written thousands of years ago. The oldest literature humans have done that are attributed to women is in this tradition, and there's some really beautiful things in there. So this poem I'm about to read is not one of those, but it's by a contemporary poet who was inspired by them. And I really like the way this poet is pointing to something. It's very short, and it goes like this. When everyone else was meditating, I'd be outside, circling the hall. Finally, I went to confess. I'm hopeless, I said. The elder nun smiled. Just keep going, she said. Nothing stays in orbit forever. And if this circling is all you have, why not make this circling your home? I did as she told me and went on circling the hall. If you find yourself partly in and partly out, if you find yourself drawn to this path and also drawing away, I can assure you, you are in good company. Just keep going. Sometimes the most direct path isn't a straight line. I appreciate this poem so much because it's pointing to the humanity of all of us. Sometimes the Buddhist teachings, and in particular some of the ones that are attributed to the Buddha, they are often pointing to an idealized state, an idealized practice. And then sometimes we have this sense that we should somehow contort our experience or ourselves in order to match this idealized experience, but that's not how it works. And that's the beauty and the power of this practice. And I would say that's where the freedom of this practice is also. We start where we are, with however we are, with whatever is happening. This practice is not asking us to be somebody we're not. It's not asking us to pretend to be different. It's asking us to show up for what's happening with ourselves, to show up for ourselves with care and respect. And that's where the freedom is. That's where the spaciousness is, instead of trying to, you know, fit ourselves into a particular shape or a particular size hole that we think we're supposed to fit into. So this idea of if you're circling, and then the teacher in this poem, maybe I'll just say an aside, the teacher in this poem is referring to Padacara, and in the next room we have a statue of Padacara. She is one of the preeminent teachers from early Buddhism. So just as this kind of like bowing to another teacher, not just the Buddha, bowing to the Buddha as well, but also having kind of recognizing, of course, there were women teachers too. But sometimes where we are, what's happening, sometimes we're having difficult emotions. Not always, but sometimes we are. And sometimes that's why we even came to practice, why we started meditating, is because we're having difficult emotions. I didn't know that was the case for me. I just knew that this practice really spoke to my heart in some deep way, which I couldn't even articulate. But part of it was because my inner life was a little bit of a mess. I didn't know it until I really started to tap into and get into touch with. I realized, oh yeah, this is where this path is really a huge support and beauty and depth and richness. It's kind of like this recognizing for myself this inner life. And as humans, of course we have an inner life. We have this emotional life. And as humans, we will never get it all figured out and have it nice, neat, and tidy. That's not what life is about. That's not what humans are about. There will always be a depth and a richness and maybe new things to explore or discover in our inner lives, in our emotional life. And that's part of the beauty. That's part of the transformative power of this practice and of this life that we all have. So in some ways, we might consider it's an ongoing exploration. That's why we find ourselves going around, but circling around the hole. It's not like to stop and sit down. Stopping and sitting down may happen naturally as this natural unfolding of this honor and respect of what's happening. So, what does it mean to have this freedom, to have this honor and respect, to have spaciousness with regard to our emotional life? It means to recognize and to have a range of emotions, a range of experiences. Sometimes we feel like we only want to have one particular range. We want to feel the joy, the delight, the love. But not this other side of the range, the difficulties, the hardships, the sadness, the loneliness, the anger. Or sometimes we feel like, okay, I'll have all of those, but as long as they're only mild. I don't want any that are loud or big. But the freedom is this recognizing and allowing whatever emotions are arising and passing away, not trying to shove away some of them, or not trying to hold on to some and push others away, or not trying to tamp them down, or not trying to make them be louder, bigger. But the freedom is to recognize, okay, our life has a rich emotional life, and things arise and they pass away. They arise and they pass away. They come and they go. They're not permanent. We all know this. There's an intellectual part of us that knows this, but sometimes when we encounter them, we start to feel like, oh, no, I don't want that. Or yes, give me more, please. So part of the freedom is to recognize there's a whole range. And to be with this, recognize the richness of that. But also part of the freedom is just also to be with whatever is arising, whatever our experience is, and not feel overwhelmed by them, not feel like, as I said, I have to get rid of them or make them be different or make them feel like, oh, I'm a type of person that shouldn't have this emotion, or I'm a type of person that shouldn't have that emotion. I should only have this and not that, or something like this. These ideas, these beliefs, these stories we have about what's proper, what isn't, what's right, what's wrong. But instead, freedom is to be able to just be with our emotions because they are there. Right? When we're experiencing them, that's the truth of the moment. Without insisting that the truth of the moment, the reality of the moment, be different somehow. And so part of the freedom of being with emotions also includes being able to unknot them if that's what's needed. Sometimes we get tangled up. We get stuck. We do get overwhelmed. or we're hiding from and feel tight and disconnected from. So to understand or learn how, what are the ways that when we find ourselves tangled up, confused, whatever it might be, that we can find our way through? That's part of what freedom, spaciousness with emotions is about. And so all of this, part of this leads to some confidence that no matter what emotion arises, it'll be okay. Doesn't mean it will always be pleasant, and it doesn't mean it'll be exactly what we want, but it means that we don't have to be afraid of them. We don't have to avoid them. And so when we have this confidence, that means that we can meet somebody, a loved one, when they got a terrible diagnosis, for example. Or when our neighbor's spouse of 50 years dies, that we can go to the neighbor and express our condolences. We don't have to be afraid of the grief that they are experiencing. But instead, we can meet their grief and yet be steady. To have some confidence that we can have those difficult conversations with our partners, with our coworkers, with our friends. Maybe there's something that our friend is doing, they don't recognize the ways in which they're undermining themselves. Everybody else maybe can see, and to have this difficult conversation, to recognize, you know, when you always are doing this, it undermines you, or you're taking away your own power, you know, some way to be able to share that with somebody. Those are hard conversations to have with our kids, with our friends, whatever. So to have this confidence that allows us to do that. And then life unfolds in a different way when we have confidence. It doesn't mean it's going to be neat and tidy. Doesn't mean it's going to be precisely the way that we want it. Have you noticed we don't get to control these things? We don't get to control our emotions, our inner life, no matter how hard we try. I know when I was young and I was trying to decide, well, okay, what am I going to be when I grow up? You know, those types of things. I chose to be a research scientist because I thought, okay, that's got to be neat and tidy, and I'm sure they don't have any emotions. They're just looking at data. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it's part of why science was so attractive to me, is because I felt like, oh, all that inner life is messy. I'll just go where they don't have any. You know, I had a little bit of awakening where I realized, oh, no, well, the science is filled with humans. You know, of course there's emotions. And you'll notice that I'm not a scientist any longer. So how do we do this? How do we find freedom? How do we find spaciousness with our inner life, with our emotions? So one way that we might think about this is that to first maybe to learn a little bit about emotions. What are they? How do they get experienced? What is an emotion? And also, what is our relationship to them? Not only what are they and how do we experience them, but often we have these unseen beliefs about them. Turns out how to have a big impact. So what are emotions? Maybe one way we can talk about it is the function that they serve. One way we might understand the function is as messengers from ourselves to ourselves. They're telling us something. Maybe it's not always immediately clear what it's telling us, if we could hold this idea of like, oh, there's a message here. I don't have to dig really hard to find exactly what the message is. But this movement to be open, like, oh, is there a message here? Kind of like that gesture of like opening up and asking the question, is there something here to be learned? Is there a lesson? Is there something that's trying to be communicated to me with this emotion? Maybe it could be that others are crossing boundaries that they shouldn't cross. Or maybe it's that we are not living up to a potential that we have for ourselves, but maybe there's some fear or something that's undermining that or getting in the way. I don't know what, you know, these messages are. This is what we can discover each for ourselves. But I like this idea of emotions as messengers, because this is a way of, like, for me, it's kind of like holding them with respect instead of like, oh, get out of here. This is certainly how I was in my earlier life. Like, oh, this is messy and uncomfortable. Just go away. But if instead we can kind of like turn towards like, okay, there's something here. And then maybe I'll also point to, so that's maybe more the function, but also like the experience. So what is the experience? And it can be really helpful to highlight that emotions are not just one experience. Of course not, because there's different emotions, but also they're composite events. They include a somatic, a bodily, a physical element. Whether you are aware of it or not, all emotions have a physical element, a somatic aspect to them. And they also have a mental aspect. The stories, the thinking, the thoughts, the ideas, the beliefs. I'll start a little bit saying something about the physical part. This is part of meditation practice, is being tuned into what is happening with the bodily experience. That this, the physical correlate that goes with emotions. So they've done some experiments with, or I don't know if these are experiments so much as they ask people, they have a little diagram of a human body, and they say, color in this body where you feel sadness. Color in this body where anger is. Color in this body where loneliness is. Where awe is, where desire is, where love is, frustration, you know, all of these. And what they discovered is that our emotions are usually in our central axis, kind of like on the torso, throat, and face. Not always and not exclusively, but kind of like here in this place. And when I, for myself, when I think about fear, I feel like a kind of like a lump in the throat. Anger, kind of, I feel like this hotness in my face. I might even be blushing, I don't know, but there's just like this. And love or care has this openness or spaciousness in my chest. And having like nervousness is maybe like, you know, this kind of fluttering in the belly. I shared with you some of my experiences. Doesn't mean it's the same for you. I just shared that as maybe a place to get curious about or to explore. What is it like for you? And it turns out, you know, right, it's maybe it's not so obvious. Some of them are subtle and some of them are not so subtle. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in a moment. But I also want to talk about kind of like the emotions have this mental element as well. So a lot of it is this story that's going along with it. I can't believe they did that. Don't they know who I am? Who do they think I am? next time I see them, I should have said this. Next time I am going to say that, or, you know, all of this kind of stuff that happens. I remember this was quite some time ago, but I remember it's really before I had a practice, just when I was beginning and I was learning about emotions, and I got so angry, really angry. And it lasted for quite a long time, days. I was just so angry. And then when I heard about this, I thought, well, I wonder what was happening. I could feel, I could recognize that I had like all this energy and the heat. But then I realized, oh yeah, I had this whole story. What had happened is I was doing what I felt like was a favor for somebody. And then we were supposed to meet at this particular time and they just simply were late. But I kind of felt like, well, I did this favor for them and don't they appreciate it? And who don't they know like what I did and they're not appreciating me? There's just this whole story just got built about how I'm this fantastic person and they are this awful person, and just because they were a little bit late, right? So sometimes these stories, right, they have this momentum of their own and they just go on and there can be this repetitive quality to them. And if we're honest with ourselves, there's this way in which we might like it a little bit too. This self-righteousness. I'm right, how dare they? Maybe we might like this sense of energy that it gives us. But also with that is a real sense of separation. Especially with those kinds of emotions like the anger, there's a real sense of me versus you, me versus the world. That's not really how we want to live our lives. In some ways we might feel like, oh, nice to have my own space, but to feel so isolated and separate is not really where humans flourish, where we have our best lives. Each of us are different on how much we like physically want to be with people, but to feel so isolated is not where there's the freedom. The freedom is to be with other people, not with other people, and maybe just to be in a way that doesn't matter as much whether we are physically with or physically separate, but to feel isolated is different. So emotions actually have like a limited lifespan. I heard this from a Dharma teacher years ago, and then more recently I heard a neuroscientist say it, and like, oh, okay, so the Dharma teachers, they weren't just making it up. And that is that emotions have like a 90-second lifespan. I keep on doing this with my hand. They arise and they pass away. 90 seconds. You're like, wait, I've been sad for months, years. How can this be? It turns out that there's so much that we're doing that kind of are like feeding them. And we're not noticing the times when, for example, this time when the sadness isn't there. Instead, we're just highlighting, oh, yeah, there's that sadness again. I knew it. I'm always sad, or something like this. But there have been times when, for me, like in meditation practice, this also had such a big impact on me. This happened quite some time ago, but it really had a big impact to be meditating and just have this overwhelming sadness. Overwhelming. Like, I just thought, I can't survive this sadness. It was just so complete. And to just be with it, feel it in the body. And it just left. And I just kept on meditating. It's quite something. I didn't have to make a big story about it. I didn't have to make it go away. I didn't have to pretend it wasn't there. I didn't have to think, like, why me? I didn't have to say, you know, analyze it, psychoanalyze, oh, I'm so sad because of X, Y, or Z. It was just there, and it was so powerful. And I just allowed that powerfulness to be there, and it found its way out. I don't want to say that the first time that happened, that's how it happened. There have also been times when I've been on meditation retreats. You know, I've done a lot of meditation practice, right? I've been on a lot of retreats, cumulatively years on retreats, sitting there with tears, sitting there with, you know, the sadness, walking meditation with tears, and this sitting there with so much, like, all the other meditators sitting around me, these poor people, like, just hating everybody, and like the poor teachers, like I hated them, like, get me out of here. What am I doing here? Diana, what were you thinking when you signed up for this retreat? I've had a whole range, right? So if you find yourself circling, just keep going. This isn't asking us to be completely different. So maybe I'll give you something a little more tangible. Or maybe I'll say a little bit more about our relationships to emotions, and then I'll give us something a little bit more tangible about how to be with emotions in our inner life. So some people, I like this expression, are emotional about emotions. That is, some people, they feel like whatever emotion they're having should be expressed and shared with others. It's completely legitimate, and this is partly how they define themselves, and they're sharing them freely all the time. Some other people aren't even really quite sure. Like, I think I had an emotion. There was that time, you know, a few years ago, where their emotions aren't quite a rich part of their lives, and they're not quite connected to them, or maybe they even feel like they don't have so much. Perfectly fine, right? So different people have different ideas about emotions. And also to point out that not only what our beliefs are emotions, or even what somebody like sitting up here being a Dharma teacher, or maybe what we might even hear about psychology these days, just to recognize that our relationship towards emotions, they're always like historically and culturally situated, right? There isn't like one perfect way to be relationship towards our emotions. Different cultures have different ways to be with emotions, even different subcultures. Like even like within the Dharma subculture, we might have, you know, like there's a way to be or something like this. But part of this practice is to recognize and honor and respect whatever your relationship to emotions might be. But a big part of practice is to recognize what is your relationship to your inner life and your emotional life. Because if we want to have spaciousness and freedom, you know, that means not being pushed around. It means recognizing that some types of relationship towards emotions are appropriate at certain times, and maybe another relationship is helpful at another time. So we want to have flexibility. And part of the way to have flexibility is just to recognize, what are our beliefs about emotions? And we might ask ourselves, like, is there something that scares me about this emotion? Or if I were to fully feel this emotion, what would happen? We might know that we have some resistance to emotions if we find ourselves just feeling uncomfortable just talking about emotions. Or if we find ourselves doing a lot of distracting behaviors, I think it's many of us carry around these little rectangular objects that speak to the internet partly, and we look at them all the time as a way to kind of like distract ourselves sometimes, because maybe there's some emotions that we don't want, so we're looking at these objects that we carry around in our pockets so often. Or maybe sometimes there's a lot of procrastination that we do because we just don't want to avoid the emotion or that's associated with whatever it is we're supposed to be doing, or what we're doing might bring up a particular emotion or something like this. Or maybe we might even believe that somehow the awakening process means that we have to be disconnected from emotions, that somehow to be an awakened person means you never have an emotion again, so I might as well just cut them off now. That's not what freedom is. That's not how spaciousness is. It doesn't mean that you become like a monotone. It means that emotions arise and they pass away. The suffering, any suffering associated with them, has drained out. We're not trying to have some and not have others. So, maybe I'll tell this short little story that I think I heard from Jack Kornfield initially. And it goes something like this. So there was this tree that has fruit, but the fruit is poison. And somebody discovers, like, oh, this is a poisoned tree. So the person says, oh my gosh, we have to cut down this tree, because we don't want other people to eat this fruit, and certainly I don't want to eat this fruit, so let's get rid of this tree. Let's, like, cut it down. And this might be a way in which we might feel like when we encounter something like aggression or greed in ourselves, or fear, or fear some compulsion in ourselves, or something like this, or maybe when we're faced with stress or loss or conflict, like, we've got to cut this down. This poison fruit, we have to get rid of this. But maybe with somebody that's been practicing for a while, maybe a little bit longer, I'll just say, in this practice, and they have this recognition that, no, actually, compassion is so powerful. It's an integral part of our life and practice, so they see this poison tree, but they've, you know, realized that life requires this compassion for everything, ourselves and for others around us. And so they say, let's not cut down the tree, but instead we'll have compassion for the tree. We won't cut it down, but we'll put a fence around it so that other people don't come and eat the fruit. So that, you know, I don't eat the fruit and other people don't. So we're just going to put a fence around it. And this kind of represents this profound shift in a relationship to the emotion. So instead of, I got to get rid of this, it's like, okay, I have compassion, maybe some care and respect, and I'm just going to put a fence around it. But maybe somebody else who's maybe even traveled a little bit further in the spiritual practice and has maybe a little bit more freedom, doesn't cut it down, doesn't put a fence around it, but instead sees this poisoned fruit and says, oh, perfect, just what I've been looking for. And they analyze the ingredients and they look about it and they learn something and they mix the ingredients of the poisoned fruit with something else and they make medicine. Medicine for themselves and medicine for others. Completely different relationship with it, not having to get rid of it, not having to isolate from it, but maybe learning something from it, taking maybe the message that's there or something. So not having to run away. And for me, personally, I'll say this, back when I was a research scientist, in a lab down the hall, they were working with cobra venom factor. They were doing this very thing. They were taking what was lethal in cobra venom. They had isolated one of the active ingredients and was using it as in a medicine that was helping for some rare disease that didn't have any other medicine. It turned out to be enormously helpful. So, right, this happens in the real life, and it's partly why I like this story, but it just shows how there can be different relationships to emotions. In this case, it's a poison fruit. And maybe there are some poison fruit that we have one type of relationship with, other ones that we have a different type of relationship with, but a big part of practice is just to notice what is our relationship to whatever's arising. So how can we work with this a little bit more tangibly? These ideas of emotions in our inner life. So there's an acronym that Gil Fronsdahl and Tanya Weiser created and used, and I like it a lot. I think it's very useful. R-A-F-T. Kind of cute, because it spells raft. And for those of you who know about some of the Buddhist teachings, right, we take a raft over to the other side, like over difficulties to the other side, and the other side, quote unquote, is awakening or freedom. So R-A-F-T, raft. R stands for recognition. First, just to recognize, oh, this is an emotion. Sometimes we don't recognize them, but it can be powerful just to recognize, oh yeah, this is sadness. This is anger. This is awe. This is glee. This is delight. Because there's this way in which meditation practice can be like going into the attic and turning on the light. I'm like, oh, wow, there's a lot of stuff in here. These like, maybe these ancient things that have been there for a long time and have a lot of dust on them. Or maybe there's some like things that got put up there not too long ago and are beautiful and aren't covered with dust. And we just start turning on the light and seeing what's there. And so part of meditation practice is to recognize. But it turns out it's not always so easy to recognize. I know psychologists have talked about that there's a lot of people who sometimes, you know, their vocabulary for emotions are like mad, glad, sad. Maybe that's just it. And that's okay. If that's where you are, that's where you are. But it can be helpful to maybe like expand the vocabulary a little bit to include things like delight, awe, frustration, disappointment, these types of things. Because there's something about when we use a language, then the emotion stops becoming this amorphous mass and starts becoming something a little bit more tangible. And when it's a big amorphous mass, it can feel like this knot that can't get untied. It just feels like big and unwieldy. So to recognize it, it absolutely does not matter if the label you use is the perfect one. Makes no difference. Just like, I think this is disappointment. And it's just that assigning a label, and there'll be this feeling like, that doesn't quite feel right. Yeah, it's. I'm not quite sure what it is. And sometimes for me, I would use this label called out of sorts if I didn't really know. So instead of trying to figure out exactly the right one, just use something like out of sorts. So recognize Recognize what the emotion is. And then maybe I'll say, if you felt like it can be helpful to like expand your emotional vocabulary, is just occasionally while on retreat or in a meditation practice or in just in, during your life, just to ask yourself, what am I feeling? So instead of waiting until it's really a problem or something that you feels like is troubling, just to occasionally just drop in the question. And then whatever arises, just let that arise. The point here is not to figure it out. It's not to get the answer. The point is to be open, to have the question. It's the questioning that's the value, not finding the answer. But I just got telling you that it's helpful to have a word for it. But like I said, don't spend a lot of energy trying to find the exact perfect word. So recognize our A, allow as best you can, as best you can. So when working with emotions, it can be helpful to recognize that there is no emotion that's like fundamentally wrong. And right, if you're sitting in your meditation posture, and it's perfectly fine, you can have murderous rage. We're just not jumping up off our cushions and going doing something, right? You can allow. It's okay if you have tears. It's okay if you feel your face red with anger or energy or something like this. You can also have sometimes tears of just touched by the beauty and awe. So, no emotion is off limits. No emotion is inherently wrong. We don't have to figure out why it's arisen. We don't have to make a story about what exactly it means about you as a person, or what it means about the universe, or what it means about the last person you spoke to or interacted with. We don't have to make it mean anything. This is often what we want to do. We want to say, oh, I'm sad because of X, Y, or Z. I'm joyful because of A, B, C. This is our habit. Makes sense that we do this. We kind of live in a culture that has a lot of, you know, psychology. If that arises, that arises. But not to like feed it, or that's not the purpose of meditation practice. That's like a different practice, has value and is worthwhile, but meditation is more to be with the experience and as best we can to allow these things to rise up and pass away. To allow them to get expressed and then just move on, right? Emotion, kind of like move out. So there's this way in which when we recognize has a certain amount of knowing. And so we don't have to know why, or we don't have to know how long it's going to last or know what's going to happen next. But this recognition and the knowing allows maybe a little bit of peace just there. A bit of spaciousness right there in that moment when there's this recognition. Okay, so allowing's not so easy. Here are some supports. F and T. F, feel in the body. Emotions have this somatic aspect component and this mental aspect and component. Transform this emotion into a bodily experience. Bring your awareness to the heat in the face. What does the heat feel like? Is it getting more intense, less intense? Is it moving or is it just in one place? Is it expanding or contracting? You can see when there's this way in which we bring our awareness to the physical experience, then we are honoring and respecting that that's what's happening. We're not trying to push it away. And we're interrupting the momentum of the story making. We're interrupting the momentum of trying to figure it out and solve it and make it be different. To feel it in the body is to be present for our experience that's actually happening. And we're being present for the bodily experience, the somatic aspect of the emotion. Let the thoughts just do whatever thoughts do. But we're just going to bring our awareness to maybe the fluttering in the belly, that sense of openness in the chest, whatever it might be. So there's this way we can stabilize on these bodily sensations, but they're moving slower than the thoughts. And there's a way that there can be like a, this kind of like this calming and this settling and bringing this curiosity. What does this feel like? Is this, what is the physical component of this? And then T tease apart the emotion from your relationship to that emotion. These get all tangled up, and we often don't even notice. I'm angry, but there's this sense that I shouldn't be angry. I'm not supposed to be an angry person. I'm a Buddhist practitioner, and they don't get angry, or something like this. And then there's this trying not to be angry, but I'm angry that I'm angry. Dang it, I don't want to be angry. And it's kind of like perpetuated. And sometimes this is a little bit under the radar. We don't even notice. Or with this love, right? Certainly with meditation practice, there can be a lot of love and joy and openness. And there can be this sense of like, oh, I want more. And we all know that grasping and clinging, right, isn't the way to greater freedom. So T is to tease apart the experience from our relationship to it. And to feel in the body is a great way to do that. And if you can't feel in the body, you're not even sure, or you're feeling like a little bit overwhelmed, I'll go back to the F, feel in the body, you can feel your feet on the ground. That's always a good place. That's sometimes obvious because chances are your feet are touching something. So there's a little bit of pressure on your feet that can be grounding and stabilizing. So feel in the body. Recognize. Allow. Feel in the body. Tease apart the emotion from the relationship, the reaction, the response to that emotion. It doesn't have to be done in this order. You can do whatever is available, and you don't have to do it every time you have an emotion. And this is a tool that can be used, that can be picked up if you feel like it would be helpful. If you feel like you're getting pushed around, you're not finding freedom or spaciousness with regard to this emotion. So with any difficulty, you can do this R-A-F-T, recognize, allow, feel in the body, tease apart the emotion from the response to the emotion. So one more thing about finding the freedom, finding the spaciousness, finding the ease, is that we might recognize that, or maybe we can direct the mind to, sometimes our response, our reaction to the emotion, to the inner life, what's happening, might be a way in which we can reflect on why this experience seems to be of use. How can we turn this poison fruit into medicine? This can be a reflection. This is not an archaeological dig or a PhD dissertation or, you know, it's nothing like this. But maybe we can just have a gentle inquiry. This emotion is part of it, part of what's fueling it is a wish for me or others to be happy. Is that what's fueling this emotion? Is there a wish for the world to be a better place? Is there a wish for someone to understand something that might be important for them? Is there a wish for things to be better for everybody? Is there a wish to just find the end of suffering that's underneath this emotion? Can we reflect on that and maybe tune into that aspect of it, right? Emotions are inner life. There's so many different components and aspects. Can we tune into that aspect? And to recognize that, you know, with our emotions, that there are helpful and unhelpful components and skillful and unskillful components, whatever's happening. And maybe spend a little bit of effort to turn towards that which can be really helpful and supportive and help us find freedom and spaciousness. And maybe we'll notice that fear maybe has in it this desire to protect. Or anger has this wish for wants the world to work well. Or that frustration maybe comes from these carrying sensations of anger being thwarted. Instead of being angry, we have this frustration, but we're not expressing our anger because we're care. Or maybe there's this way that desire is rooted just in the wish to be happy. Or that judgment stems from this wish for things to have high standards and to be the best that they can be, to flourish. Maybe sadness also maybe comes from a sense of how good things could be. I'm just pointing these out to recognize that there's different aspects and components to our emotions and to our inner life. And part of meditation practice is to honor and respect what's happening for us and to turn the light on in the attic and to see all these different components. We might have a habit to only see certain things and not see other things. I'm just going to go for broke here and throw in all the little stories here and to turn the poisoned fruit into medicine and to keep on circling around the hall if we find that's all that we have. Just be circling around the hall. But just be present for, yep, circling feels like this. Maybe I'll stop there. So let's just sit for a few seconds for a short bit. You don't have to change your posture if you don't want to. We'll just sit here for a moment. Just allowing the words to settle.